This weekend, like many people listening, I will be setting up my tax bill for last year. I'm a bit late in filing the return. I shall pay my tax on time. My wife will be doing the same process. Yet there are people out there who think we should be paying even more tax. I resent the tax I do pay. I work 7 days a week. I work bloody hard. And I resent handing over so much of my earnings to the tax man. One of the things that a lot of people say is that I should pay more tax to support the NHS. There are two massive lies told about the NHS. The first lie is that the wicked and evil Tory government have cut spending on the National Health Service. If you look at the tweet below, you will see that Jeremy Corbyn is pushing that lie today. Jeremy Corbyn is calling for an emergency budget to pump more money into the NHS. He's also said that it is Tory spending cuts which have left the government, the NHS, in the state it is. It is an oft-repeated lie. The government has cut spending on the NHS. It's just not true. I have the graph there below, which is spending on the NHS between 1955 and 2017. It is inflation adjusted. That is to say, it is spending in real terms. And you can see that it has gone up every single year. It's gone up by an enormous amount, and it is at record levels, almost £150 billion a year. Back in 1955-56, the NHS was about 10% of government spending. These days, it is closer to a third of government spending. Government spending has gone up not only in absolute terms, but in real terms. That is to say, it has gone up by more than inflation year in, year out. We continue to throw more and more money at the NHS. So the suggestion that the NHS is a victim of government cuts, of cuts in spending, is just a monstrous lie. The second lie is that the way to improve the NHS, that there is only one way to improve the NHS, and the quick fix is just to throw more money at it. Well, it's clear that that is not the answer. We've been throwing more money at it year in, year out, for many years. The big increase in spending on the health service, as you can see from the chart below, is from the 1990s onwards, the dog days of the end of the John Major government, through the Blair and Brown spendfest. You will remember when Gordon Brown left office, the incoming Tories were left with a note in the Chief Secretary of the Treasury's desk saying all the money's been spent. Indeed, it had. And the money, a lot of that was spent on the NHS. So spending rose under Labour, but even under the wicked Tories, whilst they are accused of austerity, they're accused of cutting spending, they have continued to increase spending on the NHS, not only in absolute terms, but in real terms, inflation adjusted. They continue to spend more. So just throwing money at it doesn't appear to be making the system any better. If you read the reports which are in the Liberal media, in the Guardian, the Independent, if you watch the reports on the BBC, you will see that it's in crisis. But you will, if you look at the reports from the same newspapers and from the state-funded broadcaster, the BBC, from Pravda, just a few years ago, in 2015, 2012, you'll see exactly the same reports came out. Then we were told the NHS is in crisis. You will remember in 2015 in the election, the Labour Party said we have 40 days to save the NHS because it was in crisis then. Since then, of course, spending on the NHS has increased in real terms. Since those reports in 2012, 2014, 2010, all of these years, we have had reports saying the NHS is in crisis. More money thrown at it, it is still in crisis. Now, there are one or two reasons why perhaps that graph below should be adjusted for one other thing, and that is population. Personally, I would reduce the barriers to immigration to this country. I don't want tighter immigration. I'm a wicked capitalist. I like cheap labour. What I would do, of course, is reform the welfare state so that nobody who has failed to pay taxes for 5 years, whether they be homegrown welfare bums or immigrants, gets to get a cent of welfare or indeed any access to state services like the NHS or education or housing. Now, of course, my crackpot libertarian ideals are never going to be introduced. So we are where we are. Immigration has net immigration has been running at rather large levels for the past 20 years, and that is the major reason why the population of this country has grown. Clearly, if healthcare provision is free for all and the population has grown, well, that is going to mean that there is going to be greater demand for the NHS services, and that is one reason why maybe that increase. That chart below of spending on the NHS should be flattened out a little bit. Back in 1955-56, the population was, what, 52 million? Today, it's 65 million. So you need to flatten it out a bit. Even so, real spending on the NHS has still grown year on year on year. So why is that? Well, perhaps before saying, well, we'll just throw more money at it, and that will make things better, you might look at, is the NHS providing services which it really should be for a thing which is free at the point of care? I would question, for instance, at the moment, if you are it's a small thing, but it is typical of the NHS. If you are a transgender person, a man who has had the operation to become a woman, you can demand and get a cervical smear test on the NHS. There are people who are doing it because they, for some reason, believe they're women. Of course, there is no chance whatsoever of them getting cervical cancer, but it's their rights. And there are a lot of things which the NHS provides because it is people's rights. Are they really what the founding fathers of the NHS would have wanted? I, for instance, do not believe that anyone should be able to get treatment for having breast enhancements on the NHS. But equally, if you then have a problem with your breast enhancement surgery, why should the NHS treat you? They are, in a sense, self-inflicted goals, and they're cosmetic issues. So there are questions about some of the things which the NHS do. Maybe it will be worth looking at that. In terms of is the NHS well run? Well, one of the things which is noticeable is that the ratio of backline staff to frontline staff in the NHS is markedly higher than it is for private healthcare providers in this country, and indeed state-backed healthcare providers in other countries. We simply have too many administrators, and often they're paid quite large salaries. That, to me, suggests that there are questions about the efficiency, or rather complete lack of efficiency, in the NHS. Personally, we can say that I would rather that there were fewer administrators and maybe a few more nurses on the front line. Wouldn't you feel the same way about it? There is then the efficiency of the NHS. And to give you one example, we can all predict when peak demand for NHS services will be in 2018. I'll make a wild prediction. I can predict it for 2019 too. It'll be between around about January the 7th and February the 21st. And it'll be the same in 2020 as well. It's when the flu season comes. It's the depths of winter. People tend to struggle on during Christmas because they're too busy having Christmas parties and stuffing their faces with mince pies to check with their GP or to go to their local hospital. They struggle on. After Christmas, there's a bit of a backlog because some people, frankly, should have gone to hospital or to see their GP and didn't, has put it off for the festivities. And also because that's when the flu season strikes. So year in, year out, those are the peak times. Now, there's been a lot of talk in the papers about how hospitals have failed to cope with demand from patients during these peak times in the current year. Part of that, of course, is down to the fact that the flu season this year is far more virulent strain of flu than we've seen for many years. Hence, fatalities from flu have been higher than they have been for many years. So that is throwing in one little sort of macro spanner in the works. Part of it, though, is because the NHS isn't fully manned at this time of year. I have run an article on this website about the 500 doctors who were at a training conference in Val d'Isère, where there were no actual training sessions between 9 o'clock in the morning and 4:30 in the evening, but they were taking time off, and guess what? The NHS was picking up the tab for it. That is one example. That happened on the peak week of demand for the NHS. We had 500 doctors skiing in Val d'Isère on a training course. But there are numerous other NHS staff who are maybe not on training courses, but are on holiday. They should not be on holiday. That is not the way that any sensible organisation manages itself. What is the exact data from the NHS on how many of its staff, what percentage of its staff, were on either training courses or on holiday between January the 7th and February the 21st? I think you'll find that the NHS doesn't give out that data. And it won't give out that data because the number is very, very embarrassing. In any other organisation, this wouldn't be allowed. If you are a university lecturer, and I'm not saying that British universities are any way well managed, if you're a university lecturer and you say, you know, my 5 weeks annual leave, I'd like to have the first week of the term, the freshest first week at university off. And, you know, when we have exams in the summer and we have to invigilate them and mark the papers, that's the rest of my annual leave. I'll have 4 weeks then. You know what would happen? They'd say no. No academic will be allowed to take those 5 weeks as annual leave because the universities know that is peak demand. Having run firms in the private sector, the one I run now, we know that our busiest 2 weeks of the year are the 2 weeks before our annual investor show. No staff are ever allowed leave during those 2 weeks. And I've been running firms doing investor shows for 17 years. I've always run that principle, no leave in those 2 weeks, because it's all hands to the till. That is the way that firms in the private sector operate. It's where that many things in the public sector operate, but the NHS unbelievably doesn't operate on that principle. It's no wonder it is unable to cope with peak surges in demand, because it's not allocating staff holiday and training accordingly. A well-run NHS would have everybody at work during those 6 weeks. No holiday allowed at all. If you want to have a wedding, don't book it in those 6 weeks. Instead, have your holiday in March if you want to go skiing, or in June or in July when demand is so much lower. That would be the way that an efficient organisation is run. But I see none of the people who demand more money from the NHS asking about staff holiday and training days during peak demand. That is one of the problems which the NHS faces. And finally, you have to accept that pay for certain people in the NHS has gone up dramatically, notably the doctors. The average GP in this country is earning 100 grand a year, just under 100 grand a year. Their salary has raced ahead in absolute and inflation-adjusted terms over the past 20 years. 100,000 does put you in about the top 1% or top 2%, certainly, of all earners. And these people are doing 40-hour weeks and have a gold-plated pension, which, of course, is also paid for by the grateful taxpayer, out of the NHS budget. So one of the reasons of why the NHS budget has gone up dramatically is that we've given bumper pay increases to the doctors and also to large numbers of administrators. And then we have to fund their pensions as well. So that's where quite a lot of the NHS spending has gone. If we throw more money at the NHS, is there any guarantee that that's not going to go to more pay rises for doctors and administrators? There seems to be absolutely no restraint on that whatsoever. The bottom line is, those who tell you that the NHS is in crisis because of cuts in spending are just telling an appalling slam dunk lie. The reality is the NHS is a very badly run organisation. It is hugely inefficient when compared to any comparator healthcare organisation, and it engages in management practices coping with peak demand, etc., which are patently wholly inefficient and designed to benefit the staff rather than the clients, that is to say, you and I, customers of the NHS. Before a single extra cent is given to the NHS out of the cheque I should be writing this weekend, I'd like to see wholesale root and branch reform, a drastic reduction in the number of administrators. A look at how one GP last year earned 700,000 quid, at why so many doctors are earning well over £100,000 a year. A look at wage growth across the sector. People need to know the facts. They need to know the facts about wage growth within the NHS. If the NHS was truly efficient, if the NHS managed its resources in terms of staff and holidays accordingly, it would not be in crisis. Merely throwing more money at a badly run organisation isn't going to improve the outcomes for its customers, for patients. It will simply increase the inefficiencies and the greed of many of those employed within it. That's it for this thing. I'm sure this will make me even more friends and influence people. I'm going to do more of these podcasts. I enjoy them.